Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, here to help you build and rewire your fitness mindset. Today's guest, another very, very long overdue episode with my friend who I've known for years through very different worlds. We met each other when he was bodybuilding and I was competing in bodybuilding and fitness modeling, and have both completely transitioned out of that because of other life things happening, kids and businesses and all these other wonderful things that are more fulfilling personally than bodybuilding was for me. That person is David Young. So David Young is an online personal trainer, fitness coach, and is one of the people that I recommend the most when somebody's looking for a one-to-one online personal trainer. Paul Dermody and David Young are the two people in that bracket because they, not only do they have very similar philosophies to me in terms of the adaptive nature to nutrition, where it's all about experimenting and finding what works best for each individual person, they also have quite similar training philosophies and a focus on mindset, on why are people falling off track with their diet? Why is it that you can't stick to a training program, and trying to get deeper and get into the root of a problem as opposed to just throwing a training program and a nutritional plan at you? Today's episode, we dive into a lot of those topics. So we talk about dieting, why dieting is not sustainable, and why extreme diets don't work for non-extreme goals. So some of the misconceptions and red flags to look out for in the online sphere, on social media, online, when it comes to certain diets, particularly extreme diets, keto, one that jumps to mind straight away, an extreme diet for a non-extreme goal, which, and weight loss isn't an extreme goal. To be completely honest, it's a goal. An extreme goal is to run a 200-mile ultramarathon, or an extreme goal is to do something absolutely crazy. Weight loss is just about getting into a calorie deficit, so you don't need to do an extreme diet when you don't have an extreme goal. And we dive into that in a lot more detail about how to go about designing a calorie deficit for yourself, calorie tracking 101, so that if you're struggling to even count your calories, whether it should be in a deficit to lose weight, a surplus and increasing your protein to add size, or maintenance just to kind of stay around the same body shape and just kind of improve your muscle tone, etc., how to go about your calorie tracking for that. We spoke about setting the right fitness expectations before you start any journey, whether that's a weight loss journey or any fitness journey, and then everything mindset around fitness. So the self-awareness that comes with reflecting on, right, why didn't this work in my journey? Why is this working? And then everything in between. The only thing I'll say about this podcast is our internet connection was, we recorded this through Skype because we're recording this obviously in the COVID lockdown, even though this is going out several weeks after we record it. So I don't know what the world is going to be like in a few weeks' time. But as of now, we recorded this on Skype. So the internet connection was a little bit choppy. So there are parts where it kind of chops slightly in and out. Not enough that it will take away from the podcast and the amount of value and knowledge that David has and the way that he's able to express that. But just so that you're aware going in, that is down to the internet connection slightly. Hopefully most of you won't even notice it. But I tend to be a little bit of a perfectionist when it comes to these things. So I noticed it. So I said I'd share it on the introduction. But that's everything from today's episode. I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed recording it. David Young on why dieting is not sustainable, extreme diets, and calorie tracking 101. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, David Young. David is a personal trainer and fitness coach who helps frustrated men and women not only achieve their dream body, but also keep it through building an unstoppable mindset. I'm so excited to talk all things fitness, nutrition, and mindset with somebody who, in my opinion, is one of the top personal trainers in the country. David, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Brian, thanks very much for having me on. Much appreciated. How are you?
I am fantastic, man. We've been dying to do this for ages. Like, I know we've been trying to organize this over and over again.
I don't know how long it's been. It's been so long, hasn't it? It's like, what, a year?
At least, at least. I actually feel it was like this time last year we were trying to get this set up. But David, tell everybody listening that a lot of people will be following you on Instagram, following you online. But for those who are listening who don't know you, tell them a little bit about yourself, where you're from, your backstory, and then we might go into what got you into the fitness world in the first place.
Awesome. So I suppose I'll keep it super brief. In about 2014, I was going to the gym, you know, a few years, doing the usual stuff, and it became a bit of an obsession. And naturally, kind of from that, business kind of crept out of it. So back in 2014, there wasn't many people doing online coaching. And my own background before that was actually more of a tech background. So I was getting into the bodybuilding. I was helping a few friends out with their nutrition, with their, you know, progress. And what kind of naturally happened was a few people just started asking, hey, would you do this for me? Would you do that for me? And then I think the first or second client turned around to me and they're like, why don't you charge for this? So I got into business that way, but I suppose I'll bring it back a bit further. I have two kids. I have a 2.5-year-old. I have an 11-month-old. And I suppose from the transition from bodybuilding, I kind of went from bodybuilding to business and now to family. So in a kind of runaround way, it's kind of dancing through the madness, keeping your mindset somewhat strong. And I suppose just trying to encourage others to do the same.
I love it. And for those listening who know my story, like me and you, David, could talk about so many different topics because of all the similar, our lifestyle, our interests, the things we're into. But I'm going to stay focused on the fitness side of things just to get us kicked off. I'm curious, when we met first, which was several years ago, you know, we've been friends for a long time. One of the things that was so noticeable about you, particularly with the clients that you were working with, was like these extreme, I won't say extreme transformations, but they were incredible transformations. And now you do a lot of great work with people and you work on their mindset as well. Where did you learn or get your information about nutrition and training? Because for someone that is, you know, it's not dissimilar to me, relatively young in the scheme of the information you put out there, you, even at a younger age when you started first, were putting out amazing nutritional advice and had a great knowledge on training. Where did that come from originally?
Cool, man. It's a good question. I think for me personally, and you might be similar, you might not, but I think for me, it was just driven through an obsession with just changing my own body and learning about it for myself. So in, information wise, for me, it would have probably just been people like Lyle McDonald, you know, all his old books for nutrition, programming wise. It would have just been just through people online for the most part. Like I wouldn't say I have one source that where it all kind of came from, but I think it's definitely a mixture of experience and, you know, science-based literature. From my perspective, I think you can learn a lot through experience, and it's only when you really start to apply it to people that you learn what works and what doesn't work. I'm not sure, would you agree?
Yeah, I think that's always the best combination. You know, somebody asked me on a podcast, I recorded a solo Q&A recently about evidence-based versus experience-based. And I'm like, you have to combine both.
Yes.
You know, I'm like, the evidence is the best thing that you can offer other people. I'm like, if you're putting out stuff on Instagram, the evidence is always the best one because you can...
It has to be there.
It has to be there. You can't just say, I do this and that, you know, but at the end of the day, you have to apply what works for you. When that comes to your clients and the people you're working with now, I'm curious and I want to dive straight into the deep end with this and then flesh out. What are the biggest mistakes that you see with clients that come to you, particularly on the front end? Because I know you do a lot of work with them when they're actually working with you. But what's some of the biggest mistakes that clients make or have when they come to you on the front end?
Cool, man. It's a good question. So I suppose for me, the biggest thing when people come to me is that they're probably focused on the wrong things. They're focused on the detailed nutrition. They're focused on the detailed training when they don't even have something that they enjoy in the first place. They might not have something that is actually realistic for their lifestyle, something sustainable. And I know sustainability and something being realistic is very, you know, kind of cliche and it's what everyone talks about. But I do think it's really important to just simply do something that you enjoy. Like if you don't do exercise that you enjoy, if you don't do something that actually gives you a bit of passion and gives you energy back, you're just not really going to enjoy anything. So I think the biggest issue that I see, and I'm not sure if you're the same, but the biggest thing I see is that people are just caught up in the wrong things. They're caught up in carb cycling, carb backloading, timing their meals and all this when they simply can't even adhere to a nutrition plan to start with. And then I think it's just trying to swing too far one way to an extreme and then to another, instead of just trying to find something in the middle that suits them well, suits their lifestyle, that they enjoy, that can easily be integrated. And then after you have a nice baseline to work from, you can get a bit more detailed. But I think for the most part, most people just overcomplicate everything. Like it's funny because I feel like most people are looking for like a magic bullet and they're looking for a magic fix. They're looking for a magic pill. They're looking for the next biggest thing. When the reality is, they need something basic. They need to follow it for a prolonged period of time. They need to not chop and change every single week because their weight goes up and they just need to be consistent with it.
Oh, I couldn't talk about preaching to the converted there. like keeping it to the basics. Like, there's genius in simplicity when it comes to fitness. Now, if you're, like, you know this as someone that competed and prep people for competing, that when you're at that level, when you want to get to like sub, you know, near deathly levels of body fat, by all means, you have to look for the next level of carb cycling, et cetera, and anything that's going to give you that edge. But for the majority of people looking to look better,
don't need it.
Need it.
Yeah, so I think like for most people anyway, it's just far too complicated, and they're looking at information online, they're trying to apply information that is suited for someone that might be enhanced, or it might be someone that, you know, has an unrealistic lifestyle compared to them. Like, even when you're comparing yourself to fitness professionals online and people that are influencers, like, they have lifestyles that are built to have no stress. No stress, no family, no kids, no financial pressure. And when you're in a situation like that, compared to someone that has so many things to deal with on a daily basis, it just doesn't link up. So usually you see maybe training volume mismatched, you see nutritional protocols being too extreme for the normal everyday person. And you just see people that are just lost and overwhelmed with all the information out there. Like, I'm not sure about you, but how much information is out there that is actually applicable to the everyday person? Not that much, you know? So I think... I think the fitness industry has gone forward in a lot of ways, but I think the misinformation out there has definitely caused, I think, a lot of people to be frustrated and overwhelmed and not sure where to go.
Yeah, it's the drowning in information, starved for knowledge philosophy. I'm curious, you mentioned there about unrealistic expectations, and that is such, when I think Instagram, when I think photos, fitness modeling, those, I think unrealistic expectations for the everyday person. You know, David made a great point there for everyone listening, that you're talking to people who their entire life as a blogger or a fitness blogger is to work out and train and eat a certain way. And you also don't see behind, you know, the curtain there on what else is going on with their lifestyle. You only see the picture. How do you
you
see what people want you to see online, like, you know, anyone that's ever posted anything on social media knows that. How do you align expectations with people, or how do you, I don't know, is align expectations the right word, or set goals with people on the right end, but whatever language you use.
Like, I think from my perspective, you have to bring it right back to why they're doing this first and foremost. So usually when I talk to someone that's coming on board with me, and I usually have a phone call, I usually try to figure out their big why. So I try to figure out why they're doing this, why it's really important, look at their life as a whole, and just look at their values. Because I think it's very easy to get caught up in, I want to be here, I want to be here, I want to be here. And then you totally forget about where you're coming from. Once you kind of find the reason as to why you actually want to achieve something, then you can look at the expectations that are there as well. So I think just for most people, expectations are too high, which result in motivation falling off when they don't achieve it. And it goes from a week-to-week basis like that, from my opinion. Like, you know, if someone's expectation is too high from the very start, all that's really going to happen is after they don't hit it after a week or two, their motivation will drop. They'll feel like it's pointless. Why am I doing this? I'm not going to return on the investment of time, energy, and money. And they'll stop doing it. So I think it's really important to just start from the start, ask yourself why. And then after you ask yourself why, okay, let's be realistic about this. I'm not going to compare myself to someone that has a totally different lifestyle to myself. And I'd much rather look at it from the point of view that what is realistic for my lifestyle, what is achievable, and let's try to move the needle 10% instead of 100%. So that would be my kind of approach usually when working with people.
What do you think is setting that unrealistic expectation for people?
Oh man, it's a good question, isn't it? I think personally for me, it's probably media driven. It's probably people thinking that they have to conform or look a certain way to be accepted by others. And I think a lot of us are guilty of that from time to time, myself included. So I think for me, and I suppose my background, and I look at, you know, why did I do bodybuilding and why did I get into all of that? I kind of think it was probably just one, at the start, it was probably proving to myself my worth. But I think with time, that's transitioned to looking at it for health and looking at it for just adding to my life. And I think that's why I've transitioned from bodybuilding more so towards just family, health, mindset. But I think for others, it's very easy to get caught up in feeling like you're not good enough and feeling like you're not worthy and feeling like you always have to look better and do better, when in reality is, even if you achieved what you want to achieve, for most people, that goalpost would just change. You know, it would just go further and further. So you constantly live in this world of looking for the next achievement, and you never really get time to actually enjoy it. Like, I'm not sure, what do you think?
Yeah, I think there's nothing else I can add to that. I think you've nearly taken words out of my mouth in terms of the expectation of putting your self-worth into your image, which is all well and good. I'm all for striving to get in great shape and be healthier and get fitter and all that. We're fitness people at the end of the day, and people listen to this podcast are fitness people. But if it's coming at the cost of your mental health because your self-worth is wrapped up in the way that you look, I'm like, that's something that you need to address, because you can get bigger, you can get skinnier, you can get leaner. I'm like, but that self-worth issue isn't going away until you dig to the root of the cause. I'm as somebody that has lived very similar lives in terms of our bodybuilding career, and then I transitioned out into different areas, but you said something there about the goalpost moving, and that's what I always think of. I'm like, your bar, for me, the language I use is that your figurative bar moves. That's why I hated the way that I looked with when I was bodybuilding and competing in fitness modeling. I'm like, because my bar kept moving. If I had a euro for every time I told somebody that's like, yeah, I'll just be happier when I'm leaner. I'll be happier when my arms are bigger. I'll be happy when fallacy. And that goalpost moving, and that's what happens. Your figurative bar moves. What was your catalyst for change on that? Because I'm curious, because everyone has different journeys. Was yours a catalyst, or was it a progressive thing that happened gradually? Or was there a moment where you realized that I'm doing this bodybuilding, I look this way, and you were in ridiculous, you're still in great shape, but in terms of bodybuilding, you were in great shape for that realm as well. What changed? Was it a catalyst moment, or was it a progressive thing?
Yeah, no, I'll be 100% honest with you. I think for me, I just realized that to do bodybuilding properly, you need to give it 100% of your life. And what I personally found was every other area of your life massively suffers. Now, I'm not sure if this is just me. It could just be me, because I know there's plenty of people listening to this that are competing and that have absolutely no issues with that. And I can, you know, happily put my hand up and say that I can't do that. I can't balance bodybuilding with life, essentially. So for me, I think it just came to the point where I was like, you know what? Is this really giving me the much value for the time investment versus where I could put that time elsewhere into? So when I think of my business, when I think of family, when I think of, you know, my relationship with food, even like my relationship with my body, like I think when you're into bodybuilding, it's always a case that you're the most unhappiest with your body, because as we said, you're always looking for the next thing, but it just takes away from every other area of your life. So for me, it was a bit of a realization when I suppose competed, and I was looking back and I was like, okay, so I suppose mindset with life in general probably suffered as a whole, because all that mattered was competing. And then I look back at it and I think, okay, what did I actually get from this? Okay, I learned about myself. I would never change it. I think it built me as a person. I think the adversity that I went through to get in that kind of condition, you know, taught me things about myself that I couldn't get any other way. But I was at a point where I just had to ask myself, okay, is this what I want for my life, or do I want more? And after a while, I just came to the realization that I can't balance this with everything else. So I have to be a bit more health first rather than one way focused.
Yeah, I was nearly the exact same, calendar for calendar, day for day, on what you're describing there.
Was it just the same transition for you then? Did you just...
Mine was a little bit more catalyst, and I know it's something that you can kind of connect with, but I had been humming and hawing when I was competing and traveling around doing fitness shoots and things like that, where you're staying lean all the... Like, I was miserable. I was such a miserable cunt. Like, you know, I was like, I just want some ice cream. I'm like, just give me some ice cream. Just give me some food. But like, similar to you, I know when your, you know, first daughter was born, like that was for me, I'm like, it's very obvious that bodybuilding, as you said, I couldn't put the words better. It's, you need to give 100% to it in order to get the return from it. And I just wasn't prepared when, you know, as you said, with a family.
That must have been hard for you as well. You're more ahead than I am. Like, what, it was 2015, 16 when you had your daughter, wasn't it?
Yeah, Holly? 2015. Holly was born in May 2015, and I did the WBFF Worlds in August 2015. But when she was born, I knew a week after she was born, I'm like, this is my last show. I was like, this is, it was really weird.
It's
it was
purpose, isn't it, man?
Yeah.
It's different. Yeah, I can relate.
And the perspective, you just have a completely different perspective, but not to bring this back on me, because I want to double back on something you said about relationship with food. And you mentioned overcomplication earlier, that people make the mistakes with their diet. Do you have any basic principles or guidelines that you tell people to stick to or recommend that people stick to when it comes to, you know, selections of foods, when it comes to calories, when it comes to macros, anything along those lines?
Yeah, of course. So I think the most important thing, and you'll probably agree based on everything else we spoke about, but I think the most important thing is that you actually measure everything. So if you just stick to, you know, calories for, I don't know, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, but you're not actually tracking progress and you're not tracking true pictures, measurements, scales, weight isn't exactly like the most important thing in the world. But when you're not tracking things, it's very hard to actually see if there's progress or not. So I think from my perspective, it's so important that you check in with yourself. Like if you're working with a coach, grand, you're probably gonna be doing that anyway. But just for yourself, like I think it's important first and foremost for once a week to take pictures, to take measurements, to take scales weight, note down how you're feeling, how's your mood, what's going on for you. And I think, you know, if you do that once a week, you'll start to notice patterns, because we all see ourselves in the morning. It's very hard to extrapolate information from a day-to-day basis when we're seeing ourselves every single day. And it's very easy to get to kind of go down that path and kind of start to obsess about how we actually look as a whole and say, am I a bit leaner? I'm not sure. Maybe I am, maybe I'm not. And then after a week or two, when you're not tracking and you see no progress, you're just like, ah, sure, fuck it, I'll leave it anyway. Pardon the French.
But, well, you're on the right podcast. You can say whatever you like on this podcast.
But I think, look, I think track first. I think measure your calories, measure everything, and be honest with yourself. Like a lot of people say, I'll just pick this or I'll just have that. And what happens is before you know it, they might as well not even be tracking. And I think, look, it's probably something that's constantly reevaluated in the industry. I think there's a lot of leading minds that would have different opinions, like you should track, you shouldn't track. But I think from my perspective, if you're getting into this, tracking at the start is going to be good for you to gain, a knowledge base around nutrition, around how many calories are in different types of foods. And then later on down the line, you kind of want to adopt a more intuitive eating approach. Now, this is obviously totally in line with your goals. Like if you're someone that wants to compete, intuitive eating is probably out the window. But if you're someone, an everyday person, your goal should be at the start, probably improving habits. Then as you progress further, maybe learning a bit more about nutrition, maybe tracking. And then after you reach where you want to be, you need to learn how to maintain and then get rid of any kind of tracking. Like, I'm not sure where you kind of stand with that, but my opinion anyway is it's kind of a transitional approach that should start with first improving habits. Then after that, improving your nutrition and maybe going a bit more detailed for your own knowledge. And then after that, just throwing everything out the window and living a life without counting every morsel of every single type of nutrient that goes into your body. But I think for most, it's something that's so easy to put off. Like no one really likes taking pictures. No one really likes stepping on the scales. No one really likes taking that time to do measurements, but that gives you a lot of, important data that allows you to then learn about what you're doing and adjust. Because for me personally, anyway, when I was getting started at the start, like I just wanted to understand how things worked. And like my body was a total experiment. I was like, okay, if I do this or if I do that or if I do carb cycling, what happens? You know, and it was a case of tracking everything down, learning how my body responds. And I think for me personally, that's probably where a lot of my experience came from at the start. And then just seeing, does the same changes happen with other people? Or is it very genetics based? Or, you know, there's so many different variables, but I hope that answered your question in some kind of shape or fashion.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like that tracking, especially in the beginning, like the analogy I always use is I'm like, if you're trying to track your finances, I'm like, you should look at your bank account number.
Every single day.
Yeah. I'm like, cause if you're going out and buying stupid shit, I'm like, okay, that's the equivalent of going out and eating whatever you want. I'm like, that's cool. If you don't mind.
But eat the fucking cookie and enjoy it and buy the handbag and buy the
you know, Xbox or whatever you want. I'm like, but realize that's why you have no money, because you spend your
money.
You know?
Yeah. And I think it's just being honest with yourself, isn't it? It's just taking a step back and saying, okay, is this a priority for me or is it not? Simple as that.
And nothing wrong when it's not a priority.
No, absolutely not. You have to enjoy your life. You have to live it as well. You know, I don't think people should stay on the diet bandwagon for the rest of their lives either. But I also think, and this might be a bit controversial, that dieting isn't supposed to be sustainable for a long period of time. Like dieting itself is pretty much slowly dying. you know, I don't think that's really sustainable to consistently go down to zero body weight because you're going to die. So I think it's important to also recognize that it's going to be uncomfortable to diet down to where you want to be. But it's with the foresight to know that once you get there, then it can be sustainable. Like, I'm not sure where you can stand with that, but...
Let's bounce it back on that. You mentioned that dieting is not sustainable. What's the alternative in your mind?
Like, I guess for me, it depends what you want to achieve at the end of the day. If you want to stay on the diet bandwagon, if you want to constantly track for the rest of your life, if you want to constantly feel like you have to go up and down and you have to control the food that you ate at the weekend that you shouldn't have aged, and now you're back to square one on Monday, can you not just commit to a set period of time where you say, okay, I'm going to focus hard on this for a while. I'm going to reduce my body fat a small bit further. And then I'm going to come back out of it again, and I'm going to be in a much more sustainable position where I'm not going to be hard on myself and I'm going to enjoy what I'm doing. So I think for me, it's probably a case of committing to the process where you're pushing on for a little bit, might be a bit uncomfortable, even though we have to also recognize that a lot of growth comes from being uncomfortable. But let's push that way for a while. Let's be uncomfortable to achieve a result, to then pull back out of it. Now, I can also understand how that also starts to sound like prep and non-prep, but I think dieting as a whole, I just believe that there has to be some level of unsustainability to get to where you want to be to then pull back out of it. Because I think a lot of people just stay on the dieting bandwagon for so long and yo-yo up and yo-yo down. Or some people, you know, take a sustainable approach and never really make any progress and end up frustrated with themselves anyway. And I think a lot of people end up lying to themselves and start saying like, well, I'm happy the way I am. But when you look at their actions and how they actually feel as a whole, it doesn't look like that. So I think it's a bit of a can of worms, and I think you could go either way on it. But I definitely think, you know, there has to be a certain level of uncomfortableness to come with actually dieting. What do you think?
Yeah, like I always think of, I don't think I've used this analogy on the podcast before, but I always think of dieting like, you know, somebody that's looking for a relationship but just keeps hooking up at one night stands. I'm like, that's all well and good. I'm like, sure, you'll get your fix that night, or you'll get your fix in the short term, i.e. your diet. But, you know, in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months down the line, you're going to be in the exact same position as you were 18 months ago, you know, alone, wondering why you don't have somebody long term. I'm like, that's how I think about diet and nutrition. I'm like, when I think of nutritional plans, I'm like, a nutritional plan, I've said this countless times on the podcast, is one that fits into your goals, includes foods that you enjoy, and one you can stick to. I'm like, once it hits those three metrics and ticks those three boxes, I'm like, whether that's keto, whether that's flexible dieting, whether that's vegan, whether that's paleo, it's irrelevant what it is after that. As long as you hit those boxes.
Yeah, exactly.
And
assuming it ticks those boxes.
Yeah.
And that's
in alignment with your goals. So like for some people, it's to lose weight, calorie deficit. For other people, it's to build size, calorie surplus, increase in protein, etc. But as long as it's in alignment with your goals and you can stick to it, and it's including foods that you enjoy, there's going to be a sustainability factor. But I always think of like a good nutritional plan as like a long-term partner. It's like a husband. It's like a wife. I'm like, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for something. If you're at the start and your goal is, I want something I can stick to long term, I'm like, you need to find a nutritional strategy, or work with someone like David, or work with someone like me, or work with another trainer, a reputable nutritionist or coach who can help get you there, or do it yourself. Like, you don't have to necessarily work with people. That's the beauty of podcasts like this. You can pick what David's saying, you can pick out things that I'm saying, and then you can go and apply it. That's what you want to do. So David, what are the main nutrition misconceptions you see when it comes to dieting, or when it comes to food choices? What's kind of the biggest nutritional misconception you generally see with clients that come to you?
Cool. So I think for most people, it's probably a case that they aren't tracking as much as they actually think they are. And food is creeping in. They're having a lot more calories than they're actually having. Because a lot of people, when they come to me, they say, they're just quite frustrated. It doesn't matter what they do. They feel like they just can't lose weight. They feel like it's not for them. They feel like, you know, they're a lost cause. And I think when you actually look at clients, you know, what they've actually been eating, a food diary, it's very easy to see that there's actually a lot there that hasn't been accounted for. So I think the biggest thing, and for anyone listening, I think the biggest thing is that you're just not being totally honest or totally accurate when it actually comes to the amount of calories you're on. So if you're looking to lose weight, you know, you're having too many calories if you're not losing weight. So I suppose following on from what I said earlier about tracking, I would just follow a set amount of calories. You could literally pull the number out of the sky. Obviously, don't be too high or too low, but just a general amount amount of calories and follow it for a week and track your body weight, track how you look, track some measurements. Ideally, even follow it for longer than that, maybe even 4 weeks or even 2 weeks. 2 weeks is probably a nice amount of time, and just see how your body responds. If you stay the same weight or you go in the opposite direction to the direction you want to go, I think you should probably then know how to adjust calories the opposite way. So I think just... because even when it comes to it, like, and you think of like BMR calculators and all the different formulas you can use, I think the best way to do it is just simply set an amount of calories, follow it for a week or two, see how your body responds and adjust from there. Because I think everyone's going to be different in relation to the amount of activity they have, the type of exercise they have, the genetic factors. And there's always going to be a variance anyway. So I think the biggest misconception is probably not being honest enough with the actual calories you're consuming and you're over consuming or under exercising. And I think the easiest way to kind of get rid of that is just to set a calorie point, stick to it 100% for a week and see where you're at after the week.
Yeah, it gives you great feedback. I laughed when you talked about the famous last words. I always think, but I had a conversation with somebody on Instagram recently because I replied to my DMs. I'm really good at my DMs generally on Instagram.
Yeah.
And I had a girl message me and she was like, I've done everything for weight loss. I've heard countless versions of this over the past few years, but she literally listed out the diet and it went from like really bad ones to like potentially quite decent ones. She was like, I can't lose weight. I've tried absolutely everything. You know, I've tried Slim Fast. I've tried going vegan. I've tried paleo. I've tried keto. I've tried carb cycle. And I just wrote, have you tried a calorie deficit? She goes, no. And I was like, all right.
Madness, isn't it? Absolutely madness. But this is it, you know, and this is the misinformation that's around there and still getting passed from gym to gym or person to person. Like, it really is just a case of a calorie deficit with something that fits your lifestyle. I don't care if it's intermittent fasting. I don't care if it's one meal a day. I don't care if it's carb cycling. I don't like keto, whatever. Like, I think if it fits your lifestyle and it's something that is realistic to adhere to generally, and you're fairly honest with yourself and you actually follow through with it, then if you aren't getting results, you're not in a calorie deficit.
That gives me a perfect segue to my next question, because we mentioned keto there and your response is not dissimilar to mine. Now, I'm just to give a pretext to this. I'm a fan of keto for epileptics. I'm a fan of keto for ultra-endurance athletes. I'm like, yeah, by all means, not for weight loss. I'm like, don't go on the most restricted diet of all time to try and lose weight when all you really need to do is get into a deficit. But is there any red flags or particular bad advice that you normally see given out online that is one that just irks you when you hear it? For me, keto is one of them. As much as I love it, it's a terrible strategy for Jane or Mary that's trying to lose 30 pounds. I'm like, don't go super restrictive. I'm like, that's not what you need to do to lose weight. You just need to be in a slight deficit. Is there any red flags or bad advice that you see being given out online that irks you?
I'm very much the same as you, to be honest with you. Like, I think keto is one of those things that really does not suit a lot of people. And I think people like it for the fact that it's just different. And it's like, you know, Atkins and, you know, all these different type of diets that do use it. But I think it's quite important. And what I do see out there, I think the most that is probably the worst is just completely extreme measures for something that isn't an extreme goal. So like, I see people just, and I think keto actually falls into this, but I just see people giving advice that no one needs to even follow. And they're just being led down a path where they think this has to be something that is totally unrealistic or unenjoyable for their lifestyle. And then they associate, you know, I suppose getting in shape with something that is totally unenjoyable. I do think there is a level of, I suppose, sacrifice to an extent. Like, I do think you have to be somewhat careful with social occasions, with staying on track. Like, I'm not saying on plan, off plan, but I am saying that there has to be some level of sacrifice. But I think for most people, it's just one extreme to the other. Would you agree?
Yeah, that's a great line. Extreme measures for a non-extreme goal. Like, that's it. When I think extreme, I'm like, if you're trying to run a 100-mile ultramarathon, I'm like, yeah, by all means,
it's
drop
a bit
it.
Different.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, yeah, go fucking do keto. I'm like, that'll help. That'll help loads.
Yeah, 100%. You know? Yeah, so I think it has to be in line with your goals. You know, I think that's what it all comes down to. And I think social media is really good in the way that there is a lot of good information out there. But there's also a lot of information out there that isn't really productive for a lot of people because they're not in the same position. And I think it's really important to recognize that when you are following someone that you might aspire to be like, or you know, look at some of the things that they do with their clients or with themselves, and don't just try to emulate it from the book.
How do you guard your clients against all that information that's online, good, bad, and indifferent?
Oh, it's so hard, man. Like, I think when someone comes to me, I just say to them, like, look, end of the day, you've come to me because you either like what I'm about, you've seen results that, you know, you can relate to. But at the end of the day, you've come to me for my advice. I think it's important to have one trusted advisor for each area of your life and get rid of any others. So, you know, we all know the times that we've been trying to get in shape and Billy down the gym says, oh, no, you should do this, sir. And then Tom over there says, no, you should do it this way, or Sheila from Slimming World says, oh no, you should only have this or only have that, or have as much pasta as you want. And you're kind of like, okay, can you just listen to one piece of advice, see how that goes, and then segue away from that if you have to. But I think it's important to listen to one person only. If you're paying someone, especially, I think you owe it to yourself to really lean on them for advice rather than anyone else. But it is so difficult. Like, I'm not sure where you stand with that, but that would be my take.
Yeah, like, I fall into two schools of thought on it. One is that, one, don't take advice from somebody you wouldn't switch positions with. I'm like, that's a nice little broad
so
one. You know, like Billy,
especially
Sheila.
It's hard.
Like, it's, and people do it, but I'm like, it's quite a simple, it at least gives you a starting point, you know? So I would generally offer that to most people, is like, if you wouldn't switch positions with them, don't take advice from them. But I would piggyback that with what you said. Like, if you are paying somebody for their expertise, you've bought into them enough time-wise, energy-wise, money-wise, you've, you know, monetarily invested with them, I'm like, then listen to what they're saying. I'm like, that's your focal
point. You owe it to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you're literally doing yourself a disservice if you don't.
Why do you think people don't? Or let me rephrase that. Why do you think that even though somebody will come and work with you, work with me, work with another coach, work with a trainer, work with a counselor, work with this, that, or the other, and they still take the advice from other people, why do you think that is?
I think it's a complex one to solve, and I'm not sure if I have the whole answer to all of that. I'm not sure if I have the whole answer to anything, to be brutally honest with you. I'm learning as much as anyone else. But I think it comes down to being emotionally high and low. So I think if someone is quite emotionally reactive and is having a tough time, it's very easy to lose the head and say, right, okay, I'm not sure if this is right for me. So I think it also comes down to maybe easily justifying not following through with something that they said they wanted to do. So I think it's very easy to say, oh no, that didn't suit me, and point blame elsewhere rather than take ownership for their own actions. So I think it's a complex one. I'm not sure everyone is the same. It's very hard to say. Like, I'm not sure if you would be of the same camp, or if you have some magic answer for that, but what do you think?
I'm afraid I have no magic answers for anything in life. The only thing I have is my own personal opinion and experience. But from when it comes to that, I always found for me it was a confidence thing. I'm like, the less confident I felt in either the advice I was getting or the more people I would ask. So I remember, this is so stupid, like, this is me not taking my own advice that I didn't give myself when I was younger. Like, the example I used in the Rewire Your Mindset book was, when I was single, I would go ask my other single friends for relationship advice. I'm like, that's fucking stupid. I'm like, you wouldn't,
and
go
all your single friends will tell you to stay single.
but that's the weird thing, is they don't.
Life is great,
they all have an opinion. That's the fucking thing.
Okay.
Like, you know, myself included, like, everybody has an opinion. Like, if you ask anybody that, and this is what I've learned, regardless of what, as much as I do my own thing in my life, I'm very fortunate with my business, my family, my life, etc. I still get opinions from people who have absolutely no more clue on the idea, on the political issue, on the economic issue, on the business. They've never done it. That'll have very strong opinions on it. I'm like, fuck, I was like, you work in an office 9 to 5. I'm like, you know.
And totally. And I think that's also very relevant at the time that we're recording this, like, with everyone being experts and medical experts on social media about that topic we said we wouldn't touch on.
Yeah, just about the whole fucking C word. Like, you know, it's true. And be very mindful where you're getting. And this is, and just to pull it back, like, I'm not knocking on fucking 9 to 5 office workers. I worked at, that's what I did before I went into training and teaching. Mm-hmm. But as in having an opinion when you're not the expert, realize that everybody out there has an opinion on something, and if you go to them and ask them, they're going to offer it. So,
yes.
And in my experience, they tend to offer it
wrong.
Yeah, and in my experience, they tend to, I'm not sure if it's the same with you, David, but in my experience, yeah, they tend to offer it regardless of whether you offer it or ask for it or not. You know, so you
isn't
need to,
that the truth?
You yeah, need to, you need to guard against that. You know, it's very important that you guard against
your inputs.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what happened with me. Like, I would find that the more people, the less confident I felt in, you know, like the example I use is when I was leaving teaching to start my own fitness business. Like, I asked a million people what I should do.
Should,
like,
I do this? Should I not do it? Should I?
Because yeah, I was so unconfident in, I just didn't have the confidence in myself.
I suppose you didn't have to buy in what you believed you should actually go after.
100%. That was literally it. Yeah, so I asked everybody, because my self-doubt on what I should do was very high and my confidence was very low. I was seeking out.
You're probably very unhappy and unfulfilled.
That's
and
what happened.
Unsure of the future. And yeah.
But that's not what I do now. Like, if I need advice on something, I try and figure out first and foremost, right, who's the best person to offer me advice on this situation? Who's the expert? And then I go and ask them for their advice. And then, again, everyone has their own decision-making protocols.
You kind of extrapolate and,
decide then if it's what you want to do, yes or no. But it's very important for people listening just to take home message on this, just to wrap it up on that topic, that when it comes to nutrition and diet advice, like, if you're working with somebody or you're paying somebody, whether that's David, whether that's me, whether that's an online coach, whether that's a personal trainer in your gym, regardless of where you are, like, if you've done your due diligence on the front end that this is the person that you think is the best person to help you get in shape, you have to listen
to them.
Trust them.
Yeah.
100%.
It's a two-way street, I think. Like, I think there has to be trust both ways. And I think when that falters, it needs to be, you know, shared. And I think if communication breaks down, that's where a lot of relationships can also fall off in regards to a coaching relationship.
How do you cultivate that relationship with clients in terms of building that trust between them?
Yeah, totally. And I was just saying there, like, I think if you're working with anyone, just be open and honest with them. If there's something wrong, if they've done something wrong, if you're not happy with something, then echo it. You know, and I think it's just as important for coaches to call out their clients when they need it. You know, I'm not saying that you should be a hard ass. I think empathy is probably the most underused trait or skill that I think so many coaches don't really fully lean on. But I think it has to go both ways.
Yeah, it's perfect advice for any personal trainers listening. I'm curious, David, as somebody, because there's a lot of personal trainers listening to this podcast too.
Yeah.
But as somebody that's constantly expanding your knowledge on nutrition, on training, on fitness, on mindset, is there anything, I'm sure there's loads similar to me, that you've changed your mind about in recent years where you once thought this and now, not even that you think completely on the other side of the spectrum, but is there any that jump out to your mind personally?
Yeah, it's a great question. Like, I think for me, my whole transition of my business over the last few years, well, not transition, I still do the same thing on paper, but my approach is totally different. So I think in the early days, maybe the first 1, 2, 3 years, I would have focused so heavily on nutrition, training, really dialing everything in. And if you didn't follow it, you didn't follow it. And okay, talk to you next week. But I think it's transitioned from that into much more about mindset and about, you know, why did that not happen? It's much more about kind of peeling back the onion layers and kind of seeing, okay, why isn't this going well? So I think for me, if you are getting started in the industry or if you're in the industry, maybe 1 to 2 to 3 years, I think maybe even pull back slightly from your nutritional protocols that you use or your training protocols, maybe not so much training, but I think you need to look at mindset much more than anything else. I'd imagine with your whole focus, Brian, that you would probably be in agreement with that.
100%. But I'm curious, what does mindset mean to you? When you think mindset and say mindset, what does that mean to you?
I think it's self-awareness. I think it's looking at yourself and trying to understand yourself on a deeper level. I think it's not using distractions to take your focus away from actual issues that you may have. For me personally, I've went to counseling for maybe going on 3 years now, and that was the biggest eye-opener for me personally. And it's something that I advocate so strongly about for everyone. I think everyone could benefit from counseling. And it wasn't because there was anything particularly wrong. It was just because it was an area of my life that I probably wasn't as strong as I wanted to be in. Just like if you go to a personal trainer, if you go to a physio, if you go to a doctor, I think your mind as a whole is something that a lot of people are nearly too afraid to touch on. So for me personally, I think counseling is amazing to start to understand yourself more, which gives you a stronger mindset. But I suppose your question was really more so about mindset. What does that mean? I suppose for me, it's self-awareness, it's resilience, it's knowing how to, deal with the waves of life and being okay with it. And I think it's mental health. I think it's happiness. I think it's fulfillment. I think it's love. I think it's connection. But that's probably going a bit too deep. But I think mindset is such a broad term that I'm glad you asked. But I think it's such a complex area that I think everyone has to have on some kind of level. But it's always something that can be progressed more on.
I've always subscribed, well, I won't say always, that's so untrue. I've recently subscribed to the Jungian philosophy that, you know, that what you most need is where you least want to look. And yes. Now that you mention a counselor, that's something that I've been looking into recently, because there's areas that, again, everyone has their own weaknesses that they're trying to kind of upskill and work on. What's
your weakness, Brian, do you think?
Oh God, it's easier to, I have so many, like there's just an ungodly amount. You could literally throw a dart on a dartboard and you'd pick one of my weaknesses. I'm just, in fairness, just quite good at doubling down on my strengths.
I suppose on paper, if you look at everything you've achieved, I think, you know, there's a lot there. So like, I suppose for anyone listening, it's interesting, even from my perspective, to hear someone that I'd say to 99.9% of people listening, if not 100%, would say that you're an extremely successful person. So to hear that, I suppose it's also quite reassuring.
Yeah, and it is, and I'm quite vocal about it to people, because I don't, you know, I don't hold it back. Like a lot of the mental health issues that I've talked about on previous episodes of the podcast myself, and the way I've came through that, sometimes I use the podcast, even solo episodes, as like it's my form of therapy, where I'm just speaking out loud, and it just feels like it's cathartic. It's getting it off my chest.
Love it,
and that really really helps. So I recommend people write books or do podcasts, even if you never show them to anybody, just for that alone, because it's very, gets it all out of your head. It gets the thinking out of your head. But like a lot of the things, like one of the reasons I do the endurance events, Dave, is purely down to trying to handle my anxiety, like that mass, that horrible 800-pound gorilla in the room anxiety of just like constantly.
I can relate to that.
You know, and that's 100%. My way around it. That's what helps me.
You would love counseling, man.
Yeah, that's what. I wanted to. That's what I was going to ask you, because as someone that's looking into it, because I never want anyone to listen to this podcast or listen to me and think that everyone has their shit together, because no one does. Everyone's fucked up. Just some people just, everyone's fucked up in their own way. Just they've got their own shit they're dealing with.
We're all mad. That's what my counselor says. We're all mad.
And it's true. We are. Like, no one has all their shit together. Some people are good at certain, like, this is what fitness is a big misconception on this, because if you see someone in great shape, you're like, yeah, they've got a great life. They've got all this together. I'm like, no, they've got their fitness stuff sorted. They know how to diet and train. I'm like, that doesn't mean everything else is right.
You have to be careful with comparisons as well, because I think that's where a lot of comparisons come from.
Agreed.
They compare one area of another person's life to one area of their life, and they suddenly think that that person has it so much better. But I think it's also a very good question to ask from time to time. Okay, let's take a step back. Let's compare myself in other areas, and let's see how I compare in the full circle.
Yeah,
because I think we're very fast to get jealous of others and be envious, when reality is we're comparing one part of someone's life to one part of ours. Whereas we may be stronger with family, health, or, you know, career, whereas one other person might be just stronger with their fitness. So I think that's just a really helpful thing to do from time to time as well. So something I like to do, and I'm not sure if you do it yourself, but if I ever have someone in my mind that is taking energy away from me, that's making me focus on like I'd love to be where they are, or I'm envious of them, I take a step back, I get a piece of paper, I write down all the traits I have, and I write down all their traits, and I try to link and look, okay, where are they deficient or where am I deficient? Because it's very easy then to take a full, you know, 30,000 foot picture and say, okay, I think I was just comparing myself wrong in some areas, or I wasn't giving myself enough credit, or I wasn't looking at the areas that they might be strong enough with. And that's not to even say you should compare in the first place, but sometimes we do that.
Yeah, well, it's comparing your chapter one to somebody else's chapter 20. You know, it's never a good idea. I don't do that, but I do something similar. What I do is an old Stoic philosophy, negative visualization technique, where I'll write down all the things that, are the most important to me. So for example, that list is always my daughter, my mom, my sister, my inner circle, and my business. Like the stuff that I do, the podcast, the writing, speaking, all stuff. I'm like, I can't believe I get paid for this. Yeah. And like I used to fucking clean dishes in a fucking kitchen. Like I know what it's like to fucking suck dick on a job. Yeah. So that you don't like it. So I write all those down and then I picture them being taken away from me. And that normally knocks me out of that comparison mode, because instead of like striving for more followers or more money or this car or more, I'm focusing on the things I have, picturing those being taken away. And then that tends to put me into that more grateful state.
Sorry, I kind of interrupted you there, but do you ever, like, do you know, when you're doing these really long endurance events and you're struggling, like, do you ever think of dark things to get you through it, Brian?
Oh, fuck, yeah. Like, it's the dark thing. Like, I'm a big believer that, you know, like, Jung talks about the shadow self, you know, that part of you that you're avoiding. I'm like, when you can make friends with your shadow self, I'm like, you can get fucking great shit done. And that's what I love about
it. It's doing the hard work, isn't it?
And it forces you. Like, when I ran through the Sahara, when I ran through the Arctic, in particular, but the Arctic more so, because I tore my Achilles 86 kilometers from the end.
I remember reading that,
and I was just, it was the most pain I've ever felt. But you have to fucking deal with your shadow self there. Like, you have to go dark, like, to try and get through that. But because of that, you know, it's the Jungian philosophy, to quote him again, like he says that, you know, your branches can't reach up to heaven unless your roots go down to hell. And that's what I get from ultra endurance events. I'm like, it puts you into that hurt locker and puts you into that into that state. But when you come out of it, then, like, I'm very fortunate now, David. I don't have those anxiety issues for the most part. I don't have those environmental depression issues, all those things.
But you're working on this.
But working, and that's the key. And that's that's taking ownership for it and taking responsibility for it. This is your starting point.
Be honest with yourself.
Yes. Yeah. And it's not going to get fixed unless you do something about it. For some people,
you
it's a counselor.
In the sand.
Exactly. Yeah. You know?
Sorry to interrupt you. I think from my perspective anyway, I think we've got really comfortable with looking for distractions and looking for things to fill voids elsewhere, instead of actually doing the hard work. And I think it's so easy to fall into. I did it for years, you know, and I don't think we're trained to not do that either. So it's definitely something that I think people should lean towards. Like, even how you said earlier, you should go towards the things that are really uncomfortable. It's very much so that.
It is. I had I had Nir Eyal on the podcast recently. He's the author of the book Indistractable. He's one of the leading experts to speak on habit formation and distraction.
Wow.
And he was speaking about that's a feedback mechanism. When you're constantly seeking distraction, is there an area in your life to look at that you're trying to avoid? He was like, because if it's recurring over and over again, and I remember thinking that I was constantly being distracted by things when I was working as a teacher, because I was so unfulfilled in what I was doing.
Yes.
But so now that doesn't happen. So it changes based on, you know, use it as feedback. All those things are feedback.
And your environment, and like what's lacking in your relationships, in your family, in yourself. I just think it's something that I see a lot of. I think people try to fill those voids in with, as you said, distractions, even like addictions. Like I think that's the basis for most addictions in my opinion.
Have you read Johan Hari's book Lost Connections?
No, I haven't. Would you recommend it?
Oh, highly recommend it. Yeah, he's
awesome. I'll keep that down.
Yeah, it's fantastic. His entire premise is that based on that, we seek the lack of connection with family, friends, loved ones, fulfillment, etc., is the reason for addiction and the reason that we seek out all these unsupportive habits. My favorite book of last year, my favorite book of 2019 that I read. Very, very helpful.
I can definitely relate to that as well. Like, I think for me, if I ever think of I suppose times where I'm unfulfilled with what I'm doing, or if I'm unhappy around a certain area of my life, and like, I'll hold my hand up. Like, there's plenty of times where that comes up, and then I kind of have to take a step back and look, okay, what are my behaviors saying? So am I, like, this is probably just something that's relatable to a lot of people, but am I looking to go drink alcohol more? Am I looking at other shiny objects? Am I looking at things that distract me from the things I should be doing? And if so, I think you really have to look a bit deeper and ask yourself, okay, what is it that I'm running away from or that I'm avoiding? I think that's something that I can catch myself on a lot faster now, because I've done counseling, because I've worked on myself, because I've built up that, I suppose, that tank of self-awareness. But I think it's something that everyone does, and it's very subtle and very hard to actually catch.
On the flip side of that, then, what does the word happiness mean to you?
I think for me personally, happiness means family, means health, means being fulfilled, means feeling loved, means loving, means, I think for me, it's just a wide range of different emotions that once they're slightly off balance, I feel it. And I personally feel that for a lot of people, it's very easy to not even know what happiness feels like. And even I'm here saying this is what happiness is, and I could be totally wrong. But I think it's personal. I think it's personal to your own values and your own beliefs and the things that drive you and fulfill you in life. But for me anyway, it's family, it's friends, it's feeling loved, feeling safe, feeling secure. How about you?
Yeah, I've got... literally on my whiteboard here in front of me as I'm recording this podcast, my happiness list and my misery list. I like have a list of all the things.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, I look at it every day. All the things that make me happy and fulfilled, give me energy, make me feel amazing. Like just an example, like my daughter's on there, my mom's on there, recording podcasts is on there, writing is on there, working out is on there, eating well is on there, sleeping well is on there. And then I've got my misery list, which is everything that just sucks my energy and makes me feel shit. So some of them are like really obvious, like not sleeping well, not eating, not training, but other ones are like I've got bad company,
so
up here
subtle ones.
Like bad company at email, like I fucking hate one of the things in my business that I outsource because I fucking hated is email. Like very rarely will you get me on email. You'll get me on Instagram DM and you'll get me on other platforms, but I don't like email because I get overrun in it.
It
drains my energy, so it's up there on my like drudgery list, on my misery list, and that it just keeps me
keeps
me grounded. I'm like, I can do 80-20. I can do 20% of misery in a day because I'm totally okay with that.
No, it has to be.
It just fuck it, it can't be the other way around. It can't be 80% of misery.
But when it goes more than that, it's very easy to start to feel unfulfilled and start to question what you're doing, right?
Agreed. But it's feedback. Like if you're feeling unfulfilled, that unfulfillment is feedback.
Why? Yeah.
Last question, and David, we will definitely do a round two at some stage. We'll do round two in person for sure.
This has been awesome, man.
We were planning to do round two. We were planning to do this one for everyone listening in person, but we can't because of the C word. And actually, we decided even before we were going to do this one on Skype anyway, and then we'll do round two in person. But last question, David, what are you most excited about right now?
Oh, man, such a good question. I think for me, I'm excited about life. I'm excited about what's to come. I'm excited to see my kids grow up. I continue to build a family. I'm excited to build my business. I'm excited to help more people. For me personally, I've learned over and over again that having an impact on others is probably something that I'm the most passionate about because it gives me purpose. It gives me a reason to get up in the morning. Like obviously, look, family and all that do as well. But impact for me and having an impact on others and helping others is probably one of the biggest things that make me feel alive every single day. So I'm not sure if I'm being too broad with this, but I think I'm just excited for life. I'm excited for what's to come. I'm excited for, you know, just growing as an individual, self-development and constantly learning and expanding my knowledge, expanding my belief system, expanding, I suppose, my understanding of myself, my understanding of others. That's definitely too generalized, but I think it's hard to, you know, it's hard to say one singular thing. You know, so I hope that kind of helps or kind of gets others thinking along the same path. Like, what is this really all for? Why do you get up in the morning? Why do you, you know, wake up, put your feet on the ground? What gets you going? What fulfills you? Are you in a job that you don't enjoy? Are you in a relationship you don't enjoy? Are you connected to those around you as much as you should be? Like, I think these are questions that all of us could ask ourselves a lot more, because I think when we really look at it and we really look at where we're going in life, like at the end of the day, we're all going to die, Brian, as I'm sure you're well aware of. And I think it's important to live life to the fullest. And I think it's important to constantly reevaluate and relook at our lives as a whole and just really ask ourselves, am I happy with where I'm at? And if not, do something about it. If you are, brilliant. Please continue. Please be happy. Please enjoy life. I'm happy for you. But if there's something off and if there's something bothering you, then I think it's time to change that. So yeah, I think for me, I'm just living life, man. I'm just rolling with it. I'm just seeing what happens. I don't have it all together, but I am very happy with where I'm currently at.
I love it. Your positivity is infectious, David.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
And for everybody, oh man, I love it. Like I could chat to you all day. For everybody listening, just to give a little bit of context outside of this, me and David have been friends for years, but there's two personal trainers who I regularly recommend to people because my programs aren't always suited because they don't do the one-to-one specialty online. Yes. I send people to Paul Germany and I send people to David Young, the man I'm speaking to now.
Thank you, brother.
For that reason, because who I trust and who I believe in terms of training philosophies and approaches, David is right up there at the top of that list. So, mate, I can't thank you enough for what you do for people.
I appreciate that so much, man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mate, you're helping people, you're serving people, you're making yourself better, you're making your family's life better. I love it. Can you tell everybody listening, David, we'll definitely hit a round two and we'll organize that soon when the world goes back to normal. But tell everybody listening, where's the best place for them to connect with you, to follow you online, or to send you a message if they want to connect with you about training or just stay connected with you in general?
Awesome. So I think where I'm probably at most of the time these days is on Instagram. I'm at Davey on Instagram, D-A-V-E-Y. People have started to call me Davey now, even though my name's David, but understandably. So my thought process behind that, and you laugh, my thought process was Dave Young, like, you know, Y for the Young.
that makes so much sense.
Everyone in person calls me Davey. And I've just like, I can't really even get into it every single time. Hey, Davey, how are you? And I'm like, hey, man. How are things? But yeah, so look, if you want to figure out where I'm at, Davey on Instagram, Go Beyond on Facebook. But most of the time, to be honest, I'm probably on my stories on my Instagram. So if you've enjoyed this, if you've, you know, gotten something from it, I would love to hear from you. Always about spreading positivity, spreading good vibes, spreading, you know, just, I think we're all in the same boat together, really, Brian, aren't we? We're all just trying to get through life and be happy.
I couldn't agree more. And for everybody listening, I will link everything that David just mentioned in the show notes, his Instagram, his Facebook page, his email address, which I have as well. I think it's info@gobeyond.com.
Yeah, so like for an email, you can go at info@teamgobeyond.ie, or you can go dave@teamgobeyond.ie, whatever suits you.
Yeah, and I'll link those in the show notes and they'll be in the description wherever you're listening to podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher or Spotify. So you can click on through, give David a message, check him out. David, awesome. Thank you so
thank
much
you
again, mate.
Very much, man. I really enjoyed that. Thank you for having me on.
Pleasure is all mine. Catch you soon.
Catch you soon, brother.
So there you have it, another episode of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed recording it. Absolutely love David. I could talk to him all day. So I am already looking forward to our part two in person when we do our part two. So as always, if you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to take a screenshot of it, post it on your Instagram stories and tag me and David and let us know what you thought. And if you're enjoying the podcast as normal, hopefully the sound is okay. Hopefully the sound is okay on today's episode. But be sure to subscribe so you get episodes coming every Monday. I'll catch you all next week.